Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Goals on Film, Edge of the Crowd's dedicated sports movies podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and I've got Stuart and Lauren joining me. How are you both? Lauren, I'll throw to you first because you're back on this podcast for the first time since I think we did 7 Days in Hell back in January.
Yeah, the first time since then. I'm doing well. Had some really good dinner, and I'm just really hyped up and excited for this recording for the podcast.
Yeah, I'm good, mate, as usual. Just part of the furniture around here. Pumped to talk about some sports flicks with us.
No worries. Well, we'll get right into it now. And this week, we're taking a look at 1998 sports comedy film Basketball. A little bit of a synopsis regarding this movie. It follows childhood friends Joe Cooper and Doug Reamer, who create a driveway sport called Basketball. The sport quickly gains a following and momentum before the pair is approached by businessman Ted Denslow with a proposition to go professional, with a string of rules in place to minimize any decline of the sport. 5 years later, we see that the NBL, that's the National Basketball League, is in full swing as teams compete for the Denslow Cup with plenty of fans packing out plenty of the stadiums, all contributing to the fanfare. However, Denslow dies and leaves the team to Cooper on the condition that the Bears win the next Denslow Cup. Otherwise, the ownership changes to his widowed wife, Yvette. We are introduced to Baxter Kane, the owner of the Dallas Felons, who tries to thwart any attempt of the Bears winning as he wants the changes to be made to the sport's rules, going so far as to messing with the boys' love interest, Jenna Reed, and her Dream Come True Foundation. However, by the film's end, everyone makes up and the Bears win the Denslow Cup on a pretty risky last throw. So with all that in mind, Stewie, Lauren, what did you guys think of the film overall? What did you like about it? What didn't you like, if there were anything?
Overall, I just really liked how they used a lot of comedic humor that was really kind of prominent in the 1990s and the 2000s, especially when, you know, they were the people from South Park. So they implemented South Park humor into a movie that can, like, also relate to a lot more people than sports fans. Because, sure, like, the basketball and bringing in, you know, baseball and basketball fans are, like, really cool. But the humor and the way that they portrayed their characters was kind of something that, like, people can just, like, relate to, in the sense of finding this genre to be like, oh, I'm not interested in sports, but this is cool, I'm gonna check it out. I think it's one of those types of movies that I just like, I really enjoy.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. South Park was a big part of my late teens, early 20s. It was it was good to see that kind of humor transformed into this kind of movie realm, like Lauren was kind of touching on just then. So yeah, I enjoyed a lot of the jokes. Was it Jenna McCarthy was Denzel's wife? Yeah. So I liked all the the sexual innuendo jokes between her and Baxter Kane, where he's like, let's lay some carpet, and then it cuts to her laying some carpet. She's actually laying some carpet and, you know, polishing the doorknobs and stuff like that. That really made me laugh. Also, some of the, I don't know if you get away with it these days, but some of the team names as well, they were pretty funny too. The Dallas Felons, the Miami Dealers, and Milwaukee Bears. What a great name for a team. Other team names are kind of escaping me, but yeah, there were some pretty clever team names as well.
Yeah, I think I just like the way that they have basically like taken this idea and like made it into being such a, you know, as I sort of said at the start, like a bit of a sort of fanfare thing, and you know, they really hyped it up and, you know, really conveyed that so much throughout the movie that, you know, just this small idea could grow so big and sort of have that sort of amount of an impact and momentum. And just, I don't know, I think just for me, like seeing every scene where, you know, there were fans in the stand and all this sort of stuff, just sort of said to me that, you know, such an idea like this, which sounds, you know, weird in itself in terms of like creating a sport that is a blend of basketball and baseball, that like people would get behind it. And I think that, you know, the film sort of says that that could possibly be true in real life. Like, you know, I think that, you know, the progression of a sport like this, which is made for the movie, I think that, yeah, I think that they did a good job of conveying sort of like the progression of how the sport could rise in such a big way. I think another reason why I like the film is because of the appearances by Real Big Fish. So they were pretty much a band that played at all the Milwaukee Beers' home games. And it makes sense too, because they do have a song called Beer. But I think for me, like, it also continues a bit of a trend, which I think was sort of really heightened at the time. And, you know, you still see it in movies nowadays as well. But there were those bands or those artists that were appearing in these types of comedy films. So, I mean, looking back at some of them, I mean, you had Alice Cooper in Wayne's World, and you had Aerosmith in the sequel. You had The Offspring in a horror comedy called Idle Hands. You had Blink-182 in American Pie. And so I think that it just sort of contributes to that. And I mean, I always love seeing band cameos in movies.
If I could add like another thing on James. So I think what was really funny with the Dallas Felons is that it's actually closer to Houston, but there's a city in Texas called Huntsville, and that's like the big like prison in Texas. So I think actually that was like a good play on like that part when like Stewie said with the like how you like you can't get away with those names anymore, but for that time I think that's actually kind of pretty funny for that humor. And also I don't know if y'all know, like, with the Roswell team, the aliens, there was actually, like, a big thing in Roswell, New Mexico with aliens in, like, the 1940s. They think this balloon or something from, like, the U.S. Army that landed on a ranch was something to do with, like, a UFO crash. So I actually thought that was a really funny little play on a team name.
Right. That's really interesting. That's really cool.
Yeah, I just wanted to add on, part of the reason also that I liked the movie was it was kind of an interesting commentary on professionalism in sports as well. You know, like Cooper's pretty staunch that he didn't want it going full professional with the teams relocating and you know, individual player sponsorship and team sponsorship and stuff like that. And I mean, that's flown the coop these days, but, you know, again, at the time, it was a pretty big conversation. So, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll get into a little bit of that now as well with a bit of the historical aspects because, you know, as you said, it was a bit of a thing at the time of teams changing cities or players changing teams. And we had that little bit of an infographic at the start too, which sort of displayed a lot of the sort of like, you know, funny aspects of teams swapping cities and, you know, going back and forth and all this sort of stuff. But just really quickly as well, sort of obviously basketball was a sport designed basically solely for this movie. And it was actually the invention of basketball director David Zucker. He created this driveway game with a few buddies of his sort of in the early 1990s, and then, you know, it translated into making it a feature film. So that's where the basis of, or the concept of the sport came. We'll just talk really quickly about the creation of basketball in this movie. So a couple of the rules that they have in the beginning is that a single is from the free throw line, a double is at the top of the key, a triple is behind the keys, and a home run is further back, which in the movie is said to be behind the meatballs because there's a tray of meatballs on a table, you know, further back from the from the three-point line. You can't shoot in the same place twice, and if you miss, you get an out. And there are other rules revealed during the film. And, yeah, I think that, like, those rules in itself and other rules, including, like, the process of getting a double play, the process of, like, a hit standing if the other team misses the chance at a double play, I think that, you know, the invention of different rules throughout the movie, like, keeps you really interested in the film itself, and in terms of, you know, understanding how the sport that was, like, basically created for this movie sort of works, that, you know, it can just be kept on being added to. And yeah, I think that these different rules, I think, were really cool in, you know, coming up with the concept of the game, and sort of translating such, you know, funny sort of rules onto the game, and, you know, making that happen on the big screen.
It's kind of ingenious considering they invented the game to sort of save face for rifling through Britney's mum's underwear drawer. So
it obviously has a reference to the New York Yankees' Reggie Jackson's 3-run home game in Game 6 of the 1977 World Series against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Reggie Jackson earned the nickname Mr. October during the series, and that three-run home run game helped the Yankees win the World Series 4-2, which was the franchise's 21st World Series championship. And I think that that scene, obviously, the archive footage of that scene was really good and obviously really instrumental in providing sort of the leaping point of Joe Cooper's character in wanting to say, you know, he caught that third home run ball. And it was then where he was like, you know, I'm going to be a big sports star when I grow up, and sort of pave the way for, I guess, the film to continue on with that sort of dream of his. And we obviously see a bit of a interaction between Joe and Reggie at the end as well, which I thought was a really funny line at the end where Reggie was like, you know, some kid took my third home run ball. And
I don't have your fucking ball, he says.
What? What is it?
It's Reggie. Reggie Jackson.
Well, go. Go ahead.
Reggie. Coop, nice going out there.
Thanks, man. But, you know, I gotta tell you, it's because of you that I'm here.
That's nice to know. I brought this for you. I saw some kid try to leave the ballpark with it. You gotta hang on to that. I got the two home run balls I hit in the World Series. Some wretched little shit got the third one.
That sucks, dude. I gotta get my trophy. Maybe we can have a hot dog sometime.
All right, sounds good. Hey, Coop, I don't have your fucking ball. Good luck next year.
Oh, thanks.
I'm glad that you brought that up.
That was hilarious.
I'm glad that you brought that up, Jace, because I was watching it and I was like, I don't know, because I don't know about baseball history and stuff like that. So in that first scene when they're showing the archive footage, I didn't know if the commentary was real, but I just reassured myself I'm doing a podcast with Jason tomorrow who will know all about it. So thank you for educating me.
No worries. Always happy to.
Yeah, you can. And you know, you can hit up me or Jason about the baseball history. We got you.
Oh, there you go. I've got a couple of experts with me. So there was a question that was always going to be solved.
You're probably going to ask anyway, Stuart. But just on something that you did say earlier, Stuart, about I think it was the teams changing cities or the players changing teams being sort of a hot topic at the time. I want to sort of touch on a bit here about not so much that, but more so about a couple of the other sort of comments that were made in the movie by, I think it was Baxter Kane, or maybe it was Ted Denslow, one of those owners, where he was saying that, you know, sort of the fans and their sort of attention spans are sort of shortening. And I think that quote, I think it sort of made me think that, you know, we are seeing a lot more sports sort of cater to those shorter formats or tweaking their games You know, in the cricket, they've got the Big Bash. You know, even baseball, I mean, there's Baseball Five, which is a quick sort of quick fire, five-inning game. Softball, I know, has Fully Loaded, which is like a three-inning game where everyone starts on a base at the start of each inning. So I think that, I mean, and there are probably countless others in other sports that, you know, aren't those either. But I think that it's just sort of shows how true it is that a lot of sports are having to sort of adapt to, I don't know if it's so much like people's attention spans, but like keeping people on top of the sports and continuing to see sort of a steady sort of viewership, or, you know, just people seeing the sport.
Yeah, yeah. Baxter Kane was a visionary. He was ahead of his time. The problem, yeah, absolutely. I think it definitely does have to do with attention spans, you know. We've all heard the commentary before, social media, TikToks and stuff like that. It means people do have shorter attention spans, and you don't have to look any further than cricket. That was pretty much dying when it was Test cricket and One Day Internationals, and then you introduced the 2020 scenario, and you know, it's a massive money spinner for the sport. So yeah, Baxter Kane, visionary.
Like, I don't really know anything about excuse me, Australian sports rather than like the WNBL and like the NBL, but like even now, like the MLB, like adding the new extra innings rule with that, like the ghost runner on base and extra innings was supposed to help like with the attention spans and stuff, and also like shortening games, which I actually think was like terrible rule, but it's just like Baxter Kane was ahead of his time with all that stuff. I mean, he really was. So it's happening everywhere. In the NBA, they're gonna have like a quote unquote shot clock for free throws. Is just like one of those things. And it's like, it doesn't even have to do with like the adding the quick games and like the 2020 thing that you said with like cricket. It's just like the small things within like a full regulation game that's changing the stuff that makes it very evident.
Yeah. I think like there's obviously a bit of a difference maybe in the way that, you know, I think that some sports want to speed up the game, and that might be in the instance of that shot clock or, you know, a pitch clock even in some baseball, softball related championships or tournaments or whatever. And yeah, so I think there's a difference between wanting to speed the game up and then making the game sort of shorter and, you know, shorter in the way of it's over, you know, almost as soon as it begins, just because of how much they sort of want to pack in.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I was just going to add on to Lauren's comment, and I guess your comment there too, Jace. I was watching the French Open because I'm part of the team that's covering it over at Edge of the Crowd. Check it out. French Open coverage on edgeofthecrowd.com. It's fantastic. And I noticed that they have a serve clock. You've got to serve in a certain amount of time.
So we'll now move on to a question which, you know, I don't know how we'll answer this, but how true is the sport to the movie? Obviously, being a fictional sport, there's nothing much we can sort of base it off in terms of anything that we saw prior to the movie or anything like that. But I have found out that some people have tried to recreate this sport in the years after its release. And funnily enough, there is a, I guess, sporting organization. I don't even know if you'd call them an organization, but they have an Instagram account, Basketball Australia.
Really? Yeah. Wow. That's incredible.
So wow. A couple of people in Australia started seemingly their own league, or maybe their own sort of competition at least. And so their first post was 332 weeks ago. So that was in January 2016. And it was with a caption, Jan 30th, we're going to show you why all the other sports suck. and yeah, it seems that they played a few games at the Brightside in Brisbane. throughout the next sort of month and a half, because their last post was 323 weeks ago, so in March 2016, and there's been nothing since. So it seems like it may have just been a one-off thing for a couple of weeks, just for a bit of fun and to see sort of how it translated. But there are some photos on the Basketball Australia Instagram page of like the setup and everything like that. It looks like a very small venue for, you know, what I think basketball might be, or what, you know, the sort the movie made out to be. Obviously we don't have full basketball stadiums or anything like that here, so you've got to do that makeshift one. But even so, from the photos it looked like a very small sort of venue for, you know, what you need for a basketball, or what we saw in the movie that you need for a full sort of basketball field, I guess, if you want to call it that, field court. Yeah, so that there's that. Obviously, like I said, some other people have tried to recreate it. Pat McAfee, who's a sports, I think, broadcaster or someone in the States, he tried his luck at, or he tried his hand at creating something as well. I haven't watched that video. I just saw it while scrolling. So it seems like it is a thing, or some people are trying to make it a thing. I don't know if, you know, 24, 25 years on now, that people will continue to do it, or maybe they'll just say, nah, the film does it to a T. We won't want to mess with that.
Yeah, I don't think that there would be too much of an appetite for it these days. And let's be honest, like, not every sport needs to go professional. Some sports can just stay in driveways, I think. I think that's probably the safest way to go ahead.
Honestly, that'd be like a fun competition at like a WNBA or NBA All-Star game. Like, for example, like the WNBA All-Star game is in Chicago this summer, or winter, I guess, for y'all, July. And like, imagine if like the Cubs and the White Sox came, and if like they did have a game and just have an All-Star game, like event and everything that was basketball, like that would be fun for like that type of stuff. I think that would be cool. You can set up like the court, like the basketball field court thing. And I think like that would be cool. That would drive in some revenue too. In general, people will be like, I want to see this.
That'd be fantastic if it was on an All-Star weekend or something. I'd be all about that. Just a bit of an exhibition game, get some baseball pros in as well. I think that's a great idea, Lauren. That's excellent. You need to get onto the NBA and the WNBA and make it happen for us all.
Yeah, I'll go. I'll just text Adam Silver and Kathy Engelbert right now, and I'll just be like, "Hey."
Just before we move on to looking at the cast and the acting performances, there's a couple of things that I want to touch on as well, and that is just basketball in sort of popular culture as well. Obviously, we've made reference to the two main actors in this movie, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, being the creators of South Park and lending their voices to the characters on that show as well. And, you know, basketball has sort of found its way into South Park in a couple of instances as well, I think. But basketball is credited with coining the internet slang term derp. So the first known instance of the word derp, it has been known to come from basketball. It's during the scene where they're caught smelling underwear taken from, I think, their high school friend's mother's closet or chest of drawers. And yeah, basically Matt Stone's character, so he runs out of the room and he says derp while running out of the room, which, you know, is crazy. And, you know, derp, you know, it's an expression associated with sort of stupidity, much like, you know, the ders or the does or whatever like that. And yeah, so I think that, you know, whether Matt Stone sort of just said that for fun, or whether they had thought up that word previously or not, I don't know, but that's where it sort of originated from, this particular word and this particular meme, I guess, associated with the word.
It's lived on in internet infamy, That's incredible. I didn't know that. That's a bit of fascinating insight. That's what you get here in Goals on Film. Jason Irvine just delving into the real history, the meat on the bone there. That's fantastic work, mate.
So I think Trey Parker and Matt Stone, they also brought the term into South Park because there's an episode from 1999 where there is a character called Mr. Derp, who served as the chef's replacement. And in the episode, the character performs various slapstick cliches like striking himself on the head with a hammer while exclaiming the word derp. And the expression's been used in a number of other South Park episodes. So that, I guess, is like that sort of like filtering, basketball sort of quotes or moments filtering into South Park and, Trey Parker and Matt Stone's as other notable works.
The Psychouts haven't got enough love on this podcast, I don't think, mate. That's great. I know they kind of are a part of professional sports already, but if they could be up there on the scoreboard and we could invent some kind of stat to track who does the best psychouts and all the rest of it, that'd be fantastic because, I love me a little bit of trash talk and, I just thought it was fun how they incorporated it into the, the official scoring of the game. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah. Funny.
In fact, you can't get like technical fouls or anything on those like you would, if you trash talk in a basketball game. I loved it. Yeah. Because that's the whole, the whole point of defense there was trash talk. So no technical fouls for you, no ejections. It would be wonderful.
Yeah, I think that this movie, like, obviously, I think like trash talking and like taunting, opposition players is like a contentious topic at times as well. But I mean, this was, more than 20 years ago as well, this movie. I think the Psychouts are such a big part of this movie. We saw so many of them, right from when Joe and Doug are playing like the first game or like creating the game of basketball. They run through all the rules and then, I think it's like the college boys or the high school boys like are about to take a shot. And I think it's Joe that just like spits on him. The guy's like, you can't do that while I'm shooting. And Joe's just like, no, it's in the rules. Like, it's just, we made it up just now. Like, I think from that moment, something just as simple as like spitting on another player, to see the sort of creative ways that they came up with other psychouts throughout the movie. There are some really good ones. And so I think here, like, I want to ask you, like, what you found your favorite psychouts to be throughout the movie. I think that this would be a really good sort of insight to get and obviously showcase the types of psychouts, but, what sort of made you might have laughed out loud the most?
So I watched this with my girlfriend yesterday and she was very grossed out by this one, but I found it pretty fucking hilarious when Coop has the big bag of Marlon Brando's fat.
Fat liposuction down of Marlon Brando's ass. Oh no, what am I doing here? Oh, it's all salty and warm. Oh, why would I do this? Oh, this guy ate a lot of pork. Oh.
I thought that was fantastic, very inventive, fantastic. And then, like, once the play is over, he goes and sits on the bench, or he's talking to Reema or whatever happens afterwards, and he's still sipping away on the bag. I thought that was brilliant. Yeah,
I have like a few, so I'm just gonna. I'll go with. I thought the breast milk one, the fake breast milk, obviously was really funny.
Yo, Gomez. Got milk?
Yeah. Because it was like, obviously that they, like, they're cisgender men, so obviously they don't have, breast milk or anything. So I just thought it was funny, like, however they were able to, like, at least, like, emulate breast milk was really funny to me. And how it just kept going, like, just kept going out when they went out on Kane. I thought that was just so funny. And then the other one when Raymer is, you know, playing like the classical music and getting that guy to go to sleep, and he has like the pillow.
There were four of them in the corral. The once proud beast, the broken girl, her mother, and finally, the man they call the Whisperer. The woman stared hopefully into the ancient cowboy's weathered face. Can you help her? Maybe. I repair cows, not people. His disjointed voice seemed to be coming from the box.
And everything ready for him to just, you know, pass out. I was rolling. I thought that was so funny. I just, that was great. I was like, that's a really, really clever psych out when you're in like a really large, I guess, you know, large for that purpose, like loud arena. Like, how are you able to fall asleep to that classical music right next to you when everyone's loud and rowdy? I thought that was great.
Yeah, I think that some of my favorites would have been the one where Joe, he has his like back turned to the shooter. And the shooter like is like, you know, really concerned and just like runs away. And then Joe turns around and he's got like a DEA jacket on. I think they are playing against like the Mexicans or something at that time. That was one of my favorites. I don't know how well it would go today, but that was one of my favorites. And then one of my other favorites involves Squeak. It was when he was trying to put on all the different masks, the like scary horror masks, to try and put off the characters. And then he just like takes one off and turns to the shooter with like his just normal face, and the shooter misses. And it's like, yeah, his regular face is the scariest.
There are just so many good psych outs. It's just hard to like narrow down like a few.
It's a great part of the movie, the psych outs. It wouldn't be the same without it, that's for sure.
No.
Definitely. I like that a lot. I had no idea that Derp was originally from there. Like, yeah, I was to hear that, like, in general, that like to, like in today's, you know, 2022 world, that people actually still do use Derp like really often, at least here in the US. I don't know what it's like, you know, down in Australia, but here people actually use Derp still a lot, and I used it all the time when I was like growing up and in high school and everything. So I'm just like, now that I know that it was like originated in basketball, I'm all over it. I'm like, I'm gonna continue using Derp now as like a 24-year-old.
All right, we'll move on now to looking at the acting performances, and I'll just run you through the cast list. So we had Trey Parker as Joe Croup Cooper, we had Matt Stone as Doug Sir Swish Reamer, we had Diane Basha as Kenny Squeak Scolari, we had Yasmin Bleeth as Jenna Reed, Jenny McCarthy as Yvette Denslow, Ernest Borgnine as Ted Denslow, Robert Vaughn as Baxter Kane, and Trevor Einhorn as Joey Thomas. Looking at that list and remembering the acting performances from throughout the movie, were there any actors that sort of stood out to you guys or any actors that you want to sort of highlight their portrayal of a certain character? Stewie, we'll go to you first.
Not really. It's not one for stellar acting performances. I think it's no surprise that there was no Golden Globe or Oscar nominations in the acting categories for this movie. But I did enjoy. Who did you say the actor was who played Ted Baxter? I enjoyed his portrayal. There's just
Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah, there's something about it that just it was nice to see. It's like a throwback to. So like an early 90s family movie character. He had that vibe about him. So I guess if I'm going to highlight anybody, I will highlight him. May he rest in peace, Ted Baxter.
So I want to highlight Yasmin Bleeth, because I thought that, like, she portrayed Jenna, like, really well, because Jenna is, like, a very caring individual with the Dream Come True Foundation, and she, you know, goes up to Coop being like, hey, like, can our kids, you know, get an autograph and everything, and I thought that was cool, even though, like, Coop thought that it was for Dallas, but it was actually for, you know, him.
Excuse me, hi. Would you mind signing a couple autographs for the kids?
I think you're looking for the Dallas locker room. It's over there.
Oh, I know, but it was so crowded. I mean, they would really rather have your autograph.
Really?
Anyway, would you mind signing these?
Sure. Oh. It's nice to meet you, Miss...
Reed. Jenna Reed.
Joe Cooper. Coop.
I know.
Are all these kids with you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been the director of the Dream Come True Foundation since October.
All the ones that grant wishes to sick and dying kids, right?
Oh, well, we prefer to think of them as health challenged and survival impaired.
So you're a big fan of basketball?
No, not really. I mean, the kids are big fans. I try and keep them interested in things that are a little more permanent.
Permanent?
Well, you know how professional athletes come and go these days.
Well, not in basketball. There's rules against it.
And kind of like you see how she becomes like a really prevalent character, especially with the little kid Joey coming through and everything. And then like not, you know, realizing that her charity was going to get slashed in half and everything with the budget. And then when she, you know, found out about the blackmail and then Coop, you know, goes to fix it and everything, you know, give the adults the job and have child labor, and how she kind of comes through with that and it's like, wait, this is like really good and cool. I thought that like she just kind of portrayed Jenna very, very well in those aspects of not just being a character that's gonna be like stuck in like one perception of like the one bad thing that that I guess fell on Coop, even though it was on Raymer. So it really like development that I think is very admirable for the writers, but also for like the way that she was able to portray that development of the character. I really loved it.
Yeah, that's spot on. I agree with that assessment 100%. And one thing that I did actually find out about Yasmin Bleeth and her first day on set was actually this. So on Yasmin Bleeth's first day on set, they actually filmed the scene where Jenna confronts Joe and Doug in the locker room with like the photos. And so Trey Parker and Matt Stone were butt naked in front of Yasmin Bleeth on her first day of set, the first scene that she ever filmed. And so I think that to come in, do that scene first up, and then, you know, to continue with the rest of the movie is pretty admirable as well.
Yeah, that definitely is. That just adds on to what I said. Like, wow.
Incredible scene, so very funny. Yeah.
I want to highlight Ernest Borgnine and probably Robert Vaughn too. You know, they're both... they both sort of portrayed those characters or those people who are sort of like quintessential sports team owners in different ways too. I mean, obviously Ted had the vision first up. He wanted to see the game played and, you know, not sort of change either, you know, sort of very traditionalist. And then you had Baxter Kane, and I think it was a great performance by Robert Vaughn in terms of being, I guess, like the villain of the movie as well, and just sort of the ways in which he came across as the villain, the methods that he had. You know, I think that it just really did really well to convey the other side of sports ownership. And so I think that sort of like contrast between Ted and Baxter was really good. Loosely based on the performances by Ernest and Robert, respectively. I think that I want to just like give a bit of a special mention to Dion Basher, who plays Squeak. I think that it's sort of really hard, I think, to like be that sort of like punching character, I guess, in any movie, and you know, have everything go against you, or you know, you have your the comments directed or targeted towards you and your character and that. But I think that he did really well in terms of like his character, in terms of like picking himself up, and you know, in a way, like I think that he like portrayed the character to be you know, just like more than just a side character, even though he was a side character in a way. You know, he still sort of came up and was able to give a really good performance as a character who was loosely or was largely sometimes like forgotten about or just like pushed to the side. And yeah, I really liked the character of Squeak.
Yeah, Squeak was a good character, good punching bag character, but he did play it with a bit of heart. His turn with as the pineapple when Rima and Cooper are fighting was hilarious.
Will you just stop it? Will you just hold on a minute? Look at you guys fighting on the Mulaka Laka board. You should be ashamed of yourselves. Back in the driveway, we were nothing. Now we've risen to the highest level. You're throwing it all away. If you've forgotten what basketball means to America, you have only to look at this board. The Mulaka Laka Balance Board of Trust. Don't you see what we have here? A game where guys with bad backs and bad knees can get together and compete on the same field as guys that are all goosed up on steroids. More than anything, isn't this game about getting together with your friends and just having a good time? I remember a long time ago, I didn't have anybody. You guys took me in. I guess that's why it kills me to see you like this. If we can't be friends, then the heart and soul are out of this game. Certainly out of me. And I know I'll never get that back again. God, we have sullied the waters of the Lagoon of Peace. And I'm begging you, for the love of our Caribbean brothers, dudes, stop this madness!
And I think is when he rocks up right at the beginning as the postal worker, I think that's underrated. That's an underrated scene, so I think he plays that really well also.
I really did like Squeak too, and I also found myself really drawn to like the acting behind like the main ones with Coop and Raymer or Coop and Kane or any of them. Like when he was getting like, I guess like used as like a punching bag when he was like on the rim and everything, like face down, and like the other team were going like that with his head. I found myself really drawn to like those scenes of Squeak, and like instead of like what the main scene was actually supposed to be. I was paying attention to both, obviously, but I was just like, this is so funny. I thought that this was like just such good comedic relief for like whatever like quote unquote intense moments were going on, like the main part of those scenes. Also, my nickname used to be Squeak back when I played tennis, so I think that I really like Squeak for that too. To share a nickname.
Just continuing on with the cast. So the director, he originally wanted Chris Farley, who was a Saturday Night Live cast member who's worked on projects such as Wayne's World, Cone's Head, was made a cameo in Billy Madison, to play the lead role before casting Parker and Stone due to their work on South Park having become such a huge hit. But Parker and Stone actually had agreed to do this film under the assumption that their show would have been cancelled by the time filming began. So I find that really interesting. Obviously, Trey and Matt did an amazing job in basketball as well, just as they do with South Park. But it's interesting to hear that they thought that South Park wouldn't last. I think it had been out a year before basketball had been released. So that's pretty interesting to learn. Though, and the film did have a couple of cameo appearances by sort of respected sports athletes or sportscasters throughout the movie. So in terms of sportscasters, we had Bob Costas and Al Michaels, who were both NBC sportscasters. We had Jim Lampley, who was a sports reporter and broadcaster. We had Kenny Mayne, who was a sports media personality with ESPN. And we had Pat O'Brien with CBS Sports and Dan Patrick, who was also with ESPN. In terms of athletes, we obviously had Reggie Jackson, who was a five-time World Series champion. He played for Kansas City Royals, Oakland Athletics, Baltimore Orioles, New York Yankees, California Angels, all throughout his playing career. We also had another baseball player, Tim McCarver. He was a two-time World Series champion. We had a six-time NBA champion appear in the film. That was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He played for the Milwaukee Bucks and the Los Angeles Lakers throughout his playing days. And then we had Dale Earnhardt, who is a stock car driver who won seven NASCAR Winton Cup Series championships. So that's sort of all the sort of personality or sports personalities that appeared in the film as themselves. We obviously had Real Big Fish, as we mentioned before, appear as themselves. We had Victoria Silvstedt, who was a model, actress, singer, and television personality, appear as herself as well. But I think in terms of the sports personalities, so both athletes and broadcasters, I think that it was really great to get them on board. Obviously, having a mix of basketball champions and baseball champions appear in a movie about a sport that combines the two, I think, again, just did that. Like, it combined the two worlds of basketball and baseball into one movie as well, and sort of brought and sort of blended that together, brought people who were famous for those particular sports together, just like the movie did, and bringing the two sports together. And yeah, obviously the sports casters sort of gave it that heightened experience of being an actual broadcast.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar cameo. I thought that was very funny. That was good. And I thought Bob Costas, and who is his co-commentator there?
Al Michaels.
Yeah, I thought they were great as well. I was aware of Bob Costas. I didn't know the guy next to him was a real sportscaster as well.
So as the basketball fan in me, you know, I love Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's cameo and everything, and the way that he kind of just like scares Reimer and everything when he goes like this. I thought that was really funny. I was like, that is just great. Dale Earnhardt's cameo appearance when he's like the taxi driver, then he puts on his helmet. Like, you know, all the kids and Jenna, like, in the back, like, no seatbelts, no nothing, and just goes vroom.
Excuse me, driver. Do you think he could go any faster?
Can I go any faster?
Yeah!
Hang on!
I loved it. I just thought that was so funny. But I want to touch on a scene real quick that actually has the sports broadcaster. So I did sports broadcasting all throughout college in Missouri. And the ones when I was like, and this is like 9 months into the playoffs or something like that. It was one of those. And when they like look like dead inside and like all the coffee and they're like sweating and everything. I once broadcasted a volleyball NCAA tournament. One of the sets went to like 28 points and everything. It kept going. There was like a time where there was like a huge timeout on like a review, and my co-broadcaster and I were just like talking and talking, and then Mizzou won that set. But like, it that just kind of like reminded me of that with like all the coffee, the oh my gosh, it's taking forever type of thing, and then them still like kind of being able to be excited about it. Of course, I did radio, I didn't do TV, but that just like hit me in the gut. I was like, this is taking me back to like 2019 when I like broadcasted that tournament. So that I thought that was just hilarious.
Yeah, 100%. I backed Lauren up with the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar cameo. Also, yes, Jason, Robert Stack from Unsolved Mysteries, which was a good cameo. I really enjoyed as well. Bob Costas and Al Michaels, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They were great as well as the sportscasters.
Just continuing on with the cast performances, Stewie, I think you said earlier that none of the actors sort of won any awards or anything like that. It is true. But for their roles in the film, Yasmin Bleeth and Jenny McCarthy were nominated at the 1998 Golden Raspberry Awards for the Worst Actress and Worst Supporting Actress Awards, respectively. Bleeth lost to the Spice Girls for Spice World, and McCarthy lost to Maria Patillo for Godzilla.
Oh, my God. The Spice Girl. That's getting me, Jason.
I think it's worth noting as well. So Trey Parker, and we sort of said that Trey Parker and Matt Stone hadn't really had any acting experience before. This was their first feature film together, or, you know, just for either of them, but especially together. I think that Trey had said that they were basically playing themselves, and so it was really easy for them to play the characters of Doug and Joe. And obviously that made it easier. And I think that that really translated well throughout the whole movie as well. There was a bit of a funny sort of backstage moment as well. I think involving Yasmin Bleeth. There was a very dialogue heavy scene in the movie, and Trey Parker turns to Yasmin and says, "Doesn't it suck doing a scene with someone who can't act?" And Parker was stunned when Bleeth gave him a disgusted look and responded, "Yes."
That's a good one.
I thought I'd just put those in there to see, you know, to tell you how the cast sort of was responding to, I guess, Trey and Matt's first ever, you know, foray into film. We'll now get to the part of the episode where we do look at all the actors and their characters and ask whether you found yourself relating to any of them in any particular way, whether it was the character overall, a particular part of the character or a characteristic of them, or maybe it was just a line of dialogue that you heard the character speak throughout the film.
I mean, I'd just say, like, Cooper and Reimer, I mean, I'm like a goofball in everything, so I think, like, I relate to them too in the sense of, like, we're all, like, kind of goofy. Same with Squeak, I guess, and, like, have, like, the big personalities. And so I did used to play basketball too, so I relate to any of them that played basketball who were the athletes in the game.
And Stewie, anyone that you saw yourself relating to?
No, not in this movie. I really, like, I loaded up the run sheet from last week's episode and was like, I'm going to try and be prepared here. And then I watched the movie and just, I couldn't prepare, particularly for this couple of questions I really struggled with. I haven't been much of a basketball player like you, Lauren. I didn't really see myself in any of them. Perhaps 17-year-old me was a little bit like Coop and Reema, but no was my answer.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, for me, you know, potentially like Ted, in terms of like being that really like traditionalist person who, you know, like sometimes I look at sports that, you know, have watered down their versions of the game and that sort of thing. And I look at that and be like, you know, I love it, but, you know, it's not my favorite or anything like that. Like, I want like the proper real thing. So in terms of that aspect of Ted's character, like, you know, I potentially saw myself relating to that. I think for me, it'd just be like every sort of character that was trying to take a shot and was being put off. There we saw a lot of people get, you know, pretty pissed off. And I feel like that would be me. I feel like I'd be the one to get pissed off, and, you know, if I was put off my game in any way. So I relate to every character who, you know, missed the shot because of any of those psych outs or just, you know, piff the ball at an opposing player. that would be me. All right, we are approaching the end of the episode now, and we come to our favorite question, I think it is. Usually we ask if you could have a movie made based on the sport in the movie that we are reviewing be made, what would it be and why? But because basketball is a combination of two sports, basketball and baseball, we've changed up the question this week. And it is, if you could combine two sports or multiple sports into one for the purposes of a movie, what sports would you combine and why would they be? Lauren, we will go to you first.
Okay, so I have been very excited about this question. Hear me out, y'all. Hear me out. Tennis and gymnastics. So how would you do that, right? Okay, well, let's pretend the tennis court's not actually like the grass or the clay or the cement and everything. Like, let's just pretend like the tennis court is like the floor exercise for gymnastics, right? So you'll have the net, and then you'll have, like, you know, your racket and everything. So the goal and everything is that you have to do like as many combinations of skills and stuff of like different, you know, degrees of difficulty, and then get the ball, you know, over the net in time for to like get points. And then if you win, you know, like the game and like the set, the match or whatever, you get like extra points. And I think that'd be like a ton of fun, because like you can see like all these like gymnasts and everything, like more their like athleticism, because they're already so athletic, going for, you know, like balls and tennis and trying to get it over the court. And I think it'd be like really like rushing and intense to see like gymnastic skills coming into tennis skills, because you already have to run a ton in tennis. And a lot of times, like, you'll see people, you know, sliding in tennis, you know, get the ball over the net some way, somehow. So why not add like different elements to it? I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you got to have a lot of flexibility in tennis to slide or, you know, jump up in the air for to serve and all that sort of stuff. So I like it.
Absolutely. I think it's fantastic, Lauren. I think this is a great idea. You've clearly given this a lot more thought than I ever have for any of these segments ever, but it sounds great. My girlfriend suggested one with gymnastics also, but that didn't make my list. I have a list of just two or three just ridiculous ones, I guess. My first one, the first thing that came to mind when Jay sent the message on the Slack was just a combination of basketball and WWE. I reckon that'd be pretty good. Just basically no holds barred basketball, just pile drivers and DDTs and body slams all over the place. The defense could be real interesting in that one. Another one that my girlfriend suggested was ice hockey and polo. She thought it'd be cute to see the horses with ice skates on. So that's another one. And probably my lamest suggestion, because I've basically just taken an existing thing and just said, let's make a movie about it. Like a Rocket League movie. That's like motor vehicle soccer. I mean, that'd be kind of cool too. So there you go. There's my input, Jason, for this segment, mate.
Thanks for that, Stewie. All really good ideas from both you and your girlfriend.
yeah, I agree.
Glad that she can contribute to this segment as well. And yeah, I think a Rocket League one, like, you obviously see, you know, the popularity of it. Like, I'm surprised that there isn't a movie based around it already. But yeah, I'm interested in that. My idea, I haven't given a lot of thought to this as much as you two. I have come up with many ideas, to be honest with you. But I went to a roller derby competition on the weekend, and so that's sort of been playing in my mind quite a bit. And so when I obviously had to change the question for this segment, I had roller derby in my mind, and it has been likened to rugby league already in some instances, in terms of like the sort of the crash and bash nature of it. So I thought, why not go like sort of one step further than that, and actually incorporate some rugby into it. And for me, that would involve, you know, the two sort of teams coming together in a sort of scrum-like scenario. One of the referees throws the ball in, and it would involve the person who is, basically racing around the track, who is trying to score the points. There's just an extra added bit of point scoring potential. So if they in any way try and kick the ball out of the scrum, then they get extra points. And I think just for a bit more added goal scoring potential, maybe include like a sort of like goal line or, you know, a net or something like that. And if the ball gets kicked into there, like it's an extra points on top of whatever you score. So I think that for me, it's about incorporating different sports into it that, you know, you already sort of associate the crash and bash of a rugby game of people coming together and trying to work their way through, you know, basically congestion, and just with the added point scoring potential.
That's a great idea, Jason. Yeah, that's fantastic. You both came up with some fantastic ideas.
Thank you.
All right, well, that does now bring us to the end of the episode. So, Stewie, Lauren, would you like to share your social media handles with us?
Yeah, my social media handles are just LRosenberg101 on both Twitter and Instagram.
You can hit me up on @StewieIsSickOfIt on Twitter. You can hit me up @StewieTheSportsGuy on Instagram. You can also hear me on the After Extra Time podcast.
And you can follow me on both Twitter and Instagram. I'm @JaceIrves for both of them. You've been listening to Goals on Film. You can find Goals on Film on Twitter and Instagram @GoalsOnFilmPod. Goals on Film is part of the Edge of the Crowd network. You can find Edge of the Crowd on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, and TikTok @EdgeOfTheCrowd. You can also view our website where we'll post articles relating to sport and culture at www.edgeofthecrowd.com. Until next week, thanks for listening.